spring had an influence on me, too. I remember how eagerly I sometimes peeped through the chinks in the fence, and how long I used to stand with my head against the fence, looking obstinately and insatiably at the greenness of the grass on our prison rampart, and deeper blue of the sky in the distance. My restlessness and depression grew stronger every day, and the prison became more and more hateful to me. The dislike with which, as a gentleman, I was continually regarded by the convicts during my first few years became intolerable, poisoning my whole life. During those first few years, I often used to go into the hospital, though I had no illness, simply to avoid being in prison, simply to escape from this obstinate, irreconcilable hatred. "You have beaks of iron. You've pecked us to death," the convicts used to say to us. And how I used to envy the peasants who were brought to the prison. They were looked upon as comrades by everyone at once. And so the spring, the phantom of freedom, the general rejoicing of nature, affected me with melancholy and nervous restlessness. At the end of Lent, I think in the sixth week, I took the sacrament. At the beginning of Lent, all the prisoners had been divided by the senior sergeant into seven relays, one to take the sacrament during each week of the fast. Each of the relays consisted of about 30 men. I very much liked the week of preparation for the sacrament. We were relieved of work. We went to the church, which was not far from the prison, twice or three times a day. It was a long time since I had been to church. The Lenten service, so familiar to me from the far-off days of childhood in my father's house, the solemn prayers, the prostrations, all this stirred in my heart the far, far distant past, bringing back the days of my childhood, and I remember how pleasant it was walking over the frozen ground in the early morning to the house of God, escorted by guards with loaded guns. The guards did not, however, go into the church. We stood, all together, in a group close to the church door, so far back that we could only hear the loud-voiced deacon and from time to time catch a glimpse of the black cope and the bald head of the priest through the crowd. I remembered how sometimes, standing in church as a child, I looked at the peasants crowding near the entrance and slavishly parting to make way for a thickly epauletted officer, a stout gentleman or an overdressed but pious lady who invariably made for the best places and were ready to quarrel over them. I used to fancy then that at the church door they did not pray as we did, that they prayed humbly, zealously, abasing themselves, and fully conscious of their humble state. Now I, too, had to stand in the background, and not only in the background. We were fettered and branded as felons. Everyone avoided us. Everyone even seemed to be afraid of us. Alms were always given to us, and I remember that this was positively pleasing to me in a way. There was a special subtlety in this strange pleasure. So be it, I thought. The convicts prayed very earnestly, and every one of them brought his poor farthing to the church every time to buy a candle or to put it in the collection. I, too, am a man, he thought, and felt, perhaps, as he gave it, in God's eyes we are all equal. We took the sacrament at the early Mass. When, with the chalice in his hands, the priest read the words, "Accept me, O Lord, even as the thief," almost all of them bowed down to the ground with a clanking of chains, apparently applying the words literally to themselves. And now Easter had come. We received an egg each from the authorities, and a piece of white bread made with milk and eggs. Loads of offerings for the prisoners were brought from the town again. Again there was a visit from the priest with a cross, again a visit by the authorities, again a cabbage soup with plenty of meat in it, again drinking and desultory idleness. Exactly as at Christmas, except that now one could walk about the prison yard and warm oneself in the sun. There was more light, more space than in the winter, and yet it was more melancholy. The long, endless summer day seemed particularly unbearable in the holidays. On ordinary days, at least, it was shortened by work. The summer tasks turned out to be far harder than our work in winter. Everyone was chiefly employed in building work. The convicts dug out the earth, laid the bricks. Some were employed as carpenters, locksmiths, or painters in doing up the government buildings. Others went to the brickyards to make bricks. This was considered the hardest work of all. The brickyard was 2 or 3 miles from the fortress. At 6 o'clock every summer morning, a whole party of convicts, some 50 in number, set off for the brickyard. For this work, they chose unskilled labourers, that is, men who had no special craft or trade. They took bread with them, for as the place was so far away, it was a waste of time going 6 miles home to dinner and back, so they had dinner on their return in the evening. The tasks were set for the whole day, and we could only just get through them by working all day long. To begin with, one had to dig and carry the clay, fetch water, to pound the clay in a pit, and finally to make a great number of bricks out of it. I believe it was 200, or perhaps even 250 a day. I only went twice to the brickyard. The brickyard men returned in the evening, worn out and exhausted, and all summer they were continually throwing it in the face of the others, declaring that they were doing the hardest work. That seemed to be their consolation. Yet some of them were very ready to go to the brickyard. In the first place, it was outside the town. It was a free, open space on the banks of the Irtysh. It was a relief to look about one, anyway, to see something that wasn't the regulation prison surroundings. One could smoke freely, and even lie down for half an hour with great satisfaction. I used to go as before to pound alabaster, or to the workshop, or I was employed to carry bricks to the building. I once had to carry bricks a distance of about 160 yards from the banks of the Irtysh to the barracks that were being built on the other side of the fortress rampart, and I had to go on doing this every day for 2 months. I positively liked the work, though the cord with which I had to carry the bricks always cut my shoulder. But I liked to feel that I was obviously gaining muscular strength through the work. At first I could only carry 8 bricks, and each brick weighed nearly 11 pounds, but I got up to 12 and even 15 bricks later on, and that was a great joy to me. In prison, physical strength is no less necessary than moral strength to enable one to endure the hardships of that accursed manner of life. And I wanted to go on living when I got out of prison. I liked carrying bricks, not only because it strengthened my muscles, but also because the work took me to the banks of the Irtysh. I speak of the river bank so often because it was only from there that one had a view of God's world, of the pure, clear distance, of the free, solitary steps, the emptiness of which made a strange impression on me. It was only on the banks of the Irtysh that one could stand with one's back to the fortress and not see it. All our other tasks were done either in the fortress or close by it. From the very first days, I hated that fortress, some of the buildings particularly. The major's house seemed to me a damnable, loathsome place, and I always looked at it with hatred every time I passed by. On the riverbank, one could forget oneself. One would look at that boundless, solitary vista as a prisoner looks out to freedom from his window. Everything there was sweet and precious in my eyes. The hot, brilliant sun in the fathomless blue sky, and the faraway song of a Kyrgyz floating from the farther bank. One gazes into the distance and makes out at last the poor, smoke-blackened tent of some Kyrgyz. One discerns the smoke rising from the tent, the Kyrgyz woman busy with her 2 sheep. It is all poor and barbarous, but it is free. One catches sight of a bird in the limpid blue air, and for a long time one watches its flight. Now it darts over the water, now it vanishes in the blue depths, now it reappears again, a speck flitting in the distance. Even the poor sickly flower, which I found early in spring in a crevice of the rocky bank, drew my attention almost painfully.